Okay, good afternoon. Welcome to the Senate Committee on the Environment and Natural Resources. It is Monday, the 24th of April, 2017. And we have three bills before us that our colleagues in the House have generously sent our way. And since I see our good friend Representative Marsh here, we'll start with the last bill. You know, you can never trust what's on this sheet. We're going to start with House Bill 3116. And as Representative Marsh comes up, Beth, would you tell us what this is?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3116 would allow the sale of candled eggs as ungraded if the producer of the egg sells directly to consumers or by consignment at a farmer's market. The measure would also require the egg carton to clearly be labeled as ungraded and indicate the number of eggs in the carton. Minimal fiscal impact, no revenue.
Okay, Representative Marsh, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Chair Dimbrough, members of the committee. I am, for the record, Pam Marsh. I'm the House representative for District 5, other end of the state, Southern Jackson County. House Bill 3116 is a very small piece of economic development, but one that will be welcomed, I think, by customers at, and vendors at farmers market and farm fresh sales markets across Oregon. If you have ever purchased eggs at one of these locations, you know that one of the great pleasures in that experience is opening the carton to find a variation in size and even color of eggs. However, the Department of Justice recently advised the Department of Agriculture that the current statutes require that farm direct eggs be graded. Farmers who are selling a modest quantity of eggs and often wrangling a large variety of chickens with various egg laying capabilities find grading difficult and an addition of unneeded complexity. I would also argue that standardization is, in fact, not what consumers are even looking for when they go to buy farm fresh eggs. HB 3116 clarifies that farm direct eggs may be sold marked ungraded. The carton must be clearly labeled as ungraded along with other already required packaging information. This is a very small step for economic development, but a big step for the consumers of farm fresh eggs. And I'm happy to answer questions and appreciate your support.
Colleagues, any questions? Senator Brzezinski.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I don't see an emergency clause on here. And the reason I bring that up is because markets are in action now. And I'm wondering if that was discussed on the House side, and if so, why that wasn't considered.
It was not discussed in committee, but it has been discussed with the various departments. And the sense is, if this legislation is moving forward, that there won't be a move to actually enforce the current interpretation of law in the current farmers market season.
Okay.
Is that satisfactory to you, Mr. DA?
Well, I mean, it's nice to have that, but at the same time, it seems to me that if we understand what impact this could have on a particular area of the state, I would feel comfortable for this purpose seeing an emergency clause, just because it seems like it would make it clear and we can ensure the producers that they don't have to be concerned as to what might happen between now and January 1 of 2018.
Anybody have a problem with that? We'll seek an amendment, and we were not going to work it today anyway, so this would give us the time to prepare one. Senator Robles.
Yeah, so a couple questions, if I may.
Sure.
The first is that when did this new Attorney General decision come out? Because I thought I've been buying these. I don't remember a time I couldn't buy farm fresh eggs at my local farmer's market. So.
Well, and thank you, Senator Dimbrough, Senator Roblin. I have some experts here who can give you a more specific timeline, but certainly within the last year. So this is an issue that's culminated since the last legislative season.
Okay. What else was I thinking? I think that's probably it. I like the idea of the emergency clause just because I think we have farmers market starting really soon, if not already. I know they have in Coos Bay already.
Mm-hmm.
And it's... I was just kind of surprised. The only thing is the labeling. So can they, most of the people that I know collect other egg cartons or from their friends' egg cartons, and they fill those up, and so they have names on them and already say grade A large eggs, even though they aren't. So they just have to put is there any definition of what they have to, how they label it? Can they put a state, put a piece of paper on it and glue it on? Is that okay? I mean, I just want to make sure that we know how to do it.
Thank you, Chair Dimbrough, Senator Roblin. They are required to, already required to obliterate whatever kind of marking is on the, just scratch out with black marker, and then they are required to put some labeling on it that shows what the contents is. So this would simply note in this bill that they also needed to note that it would be, they are ungraded.
Okay, so they could have a sticker or something that they just put on any of their cartons, and they, okay, that makes me feel a little better. I was.
That's the ones that we buy seem to be, that's the way they
mark
them. Just they have a sticker that's on there. It has the name of the farm and then, you know, what other required information.
Okay, that's great.
Yeah.
Because I like the recycling and reusing of full
containers. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, we get ours from a friend, and it's such a pleasure. You open the carton, and you never know what you're going to get.
Right.
That's true.
The colors, the sizes.
We're trying to maintain that element of surprise.
Yeah, thank you. Any other questions for Representative Marsh?
Well,
yes.
I will just say one thing. When I first read it, I said, why are we dealing with candied eggs? Then I had to read it again.
There has been that question.
That's great. Thanks. Thanks.
So thank you very much. And we do have, by the way, as we've been working on this, a reservoir of about 158 jokes, if anybody would like to hear any of them, including the egg spurts that will follow.
Okay, thank you. I have one expert signed up, Ivan Molesky. Is there anyone else who is going to want to speak on this? Feel free. Okay, Ivan.
Chair Dimbrough, members of the committee, for the record, Ivan Molesky with Friends and Family Farmers, testifying in support of House Bill 3116 today. Appreciate your questions. I know that Stephanie Page from the Oregon Department of Agriculture is here. If you have got any really technical questions, I'm sure she could answer those better than I can. But we are in support of the bill, Friends and Family Farmers. Our members include farmers and food producers across Oregon, many of whom engage in farm direct sales via farmers markets, farm stands, and through community-supported agriculture venues. You know, part of why I'm here today is to let you know this is a really important contributor to Oregon's economy, providing income for small and mid-sized farms across the state. According to the USDA's most recent census of agriculture, Oregon is now in the top 10 states for total value in farm direct sales, over $44 million annually. And we rank sixth in the nation in the number of farms that sell farm direct, with over 6,000 farms doing so. Obviously, some of these are egg producers, and recognizing the importance of this farm direct agriculture, in 2011, the legislature passed Oregon's farm direct law, which clarified rules around many farm direct products. So this bill follows in that vein of supporting farm direct agriculture. It would allow the farm direct sale of ungraded eggs as long as they are labeled as such. And this is, as you sort of alluded to, this is actually a practice that is widely undertaken at farmers markets and in farm direct venues all across the state, despite not being clearly allowed in Oregon law. So really to ensure that farm direct producers have a clear set of rules and to be consistent with common practice, that's why House Bill 3116 is needed. Thank you very much. I've submitted some written testimony with some additional info, but I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Thanks, Evan. Any questions for Mr. Molesky? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, since no one else came forward to speak, I will close our public hearing. Oh,
should
I'm sorry.
Have the Department of Agriculture say whether they think it would be good to have the emergency clause or not? Is that, I don't know if they need to say anything or not. Probably.
You want
not.
To come up, Stephanie?
She's hiding in the corner.
Yep.
We saw you hiding back there.
Good afternoon, Chair Dimbrough, members of the committee. For the record, Stephanie Page with Oregon Department of Agriculture. I don't think we would have any concerns with an emergency clause. As was stated earlier, we're not out looking to enforce grading requirements on direct sold eggs. And we've worked with the developers of this bill. So our main priority was preserving the candling requirement in there, and that is in there. So that's our concern from the food safety aspect.
Okay, great.
And can I ask one question?
Yes, Senator Roman.
So the other thing is, and the only reason this comes up is we had a funeral of a good friend and a big committee member who liked raising things. It was his wife didn't want him to get pigs and stuff, but they did do chickens, and he hated washing eggs. So there's still a requirement to, I guess there wouldn't necessarily be a requirement to wash them and clean them all up before you put them in the carton. It would look stupid if you didn't, but any other health issues or concerns about farm direct eggs that are out there besides candling?
Chair Denbro, Senator Roblin, not that we can think of that. We really wanted to make sure the candling requirement was in there, and that folks do wash the eggs. But
okay.
Those were the two.
Is
the
that
two
a requirement
issues.
Now that they're washing and cleaning them all up, or is it just something? It's standard practice. I know that people who are on farms do that, but I just wanted to make sure that we didn't need another deal just to remind them. But candling is enough from your perspective.
I think that has satisfied
okay.
Our concerns. So
okay.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you.
All right, so I will close the public hearing. We will request an emergency clause and probably have this to vote on Monday.
Thursday.
Or Thursday. That's right, Thursday.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Okay, so is Rayfield here for this one? Okay, so I guess we're going backwards today. So I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2576A and invite...
I stopped him.
The good representative from Corvallis up.
We've been waiting for you for a long time.
Chair Denbro, members of the committee, excluding Senator Roblin. The only reason I say it, Dan Rayfield, House District 16, Corvallis, Philomath. The only reason I say it is I was informed a little earlier that Senator Roblin was not interested in my testimony today. He said that
Yeah, I was dry. I did talk to him. I said I thought they wanted to build a pass, so I was wondering why.
So with that said, here with the bill before you, which is really kind of a modification to Measure 100 that is really, and with OSU in my backyard, really intended to help them function as they currently are functioning, and you'll kind of hear a little bit of background behind that. We started out with an original bill that was drafted in a way that was too broad, and as we started working with stakeholder groups, we worked on the amendment, which is the bill that you have now, which is narrowly tailored to address what we want to do. There is a -3 amendment for zoos that meet certain criteria, which will be talked about, that we are okay with, and it is my impression that the stakeholders are also okay with that. Just for the committee to note, there are some folks that are interested in amending this bill even further. We are not interested in doing that outside of the -3 amendment, as we do believe that that would go too far in terms of where we would like to have this bill move forward. So that's kind of my background, and then I will turn it over to the fine gentleman here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jock Mills. I'm the Director of Government Relations for Oregon State University. I'm here in representing all of the research institutions that would be affected by this bill. We've worked closely together on this bill. I'll delve a little bit into the history in terms of why this is in front of you. We first became aware of the Measure 100 when a number of our faculty came to us and said, have you seen this? We're a little worried about how it's going to affect us. We do a number of transactions we think wouldn't be available to continue in the future if this measure passed. At that time, we reached out to the Humane Society, and it was too late. The signatures were being circulated. There was really nothing we could do. So following the adoption of the measure, we reached out to Representative Rayfield, who said, sure, draft something. We drafted an encompassing measure that not only got the exemption we needed from and redefined the transactions, but also redefined the species as they were in the ballot measure, because our scientists thought that would also help in terms of redefining the species. So we then approached with the bill draft the Humane Society, and the Humane Society said, we're not really wild about changing the definition of the species. Let's work on the exemption, and then if you get the exemption you want, then you don't have to worry about reaching into what we think is a significant change in the ballot measure that the voters adopted. What you're talking about in terms of needing an exemption is not reaching into that. So that's what we did. We worked out an amendment, which was agreed to on the House floor, to take that species definition out and just concentrate on changes in the species definition and just concentrate on the exemption. And so that's what's before you. The measure on the floor passed on a vote of 58-0. So I'd like to hand it over to somebody who can describe the transactions that are affected by the bill so you can get a sense of what we do.
So my name is Peter Konstantinidis. I'm the curator of the vertebrate collection of the Fisheries and Wildlife Department at OSU. And we are strong regional. We have a strong regional collection about of fishes of the Pacific Northwest and birds and mammals of the Pacific Northwest, especially focusing on Oregon. And as many museums in the country with a regional collection, we usually try to stay competitive by exchanging specimens within the institution, within different collections, because we just don't have the nice but also endangered freshwater darters of Tennessee, and they don't have our Pacific Northwest marine fishes. And to stay competitive in terms of research, we exchange specimens. That's a common practice. Practice. Thank you. That we do. And also, if it comes to educational purposes, we use our all three collections. They are heavily used in teaching, and we teach many students. They leave the university after a while and go into state agencies or becoming environmental consultants. And of course, we also want to train those people in the broadest sense we can. But with that kind of restriction, we would not be able to do that anymore that easily. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Peter. Yes, Senator Roblin.
So this one has the sale has to have been entered into before July 1, 2007. That's the way it says now. Has that been changed in the bill? I didn't look at it.
What line are you looking at? I'm sorry.
Well, I was just looking
at it. No, it's the summary.
It's the summary.
Making
sure that it doesn't.
It's still there, yeah.
So that means new sales couldn't happen. Does that mean we can't do some of these exchanges, or we just can't do the exchanges if they cost money? We can exchange specimens, but we can't ask anything for the specimens. Is that what this is saying? That made me a little nervous.
I don't understand it.
It's on page 2 of the bill, and it's the bold print starting on lines 17 for pre July 1 and then post on page line 20, so that might help.
Oh, this has to do with gift agreements, correct? And I know this language was put in at the request of the University of, well, actually, I don't know that for sure.
I'm sorry.
I don't know how to answer. We're looking at line 17 on page two of the bill.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, members, I think what you're looking at would allow the Department of Fish and Wildlife to permit purchases, sales, or donations after July 1st, 2017.
Would allow.
Unless it's prohibited by federal law, it would allow the State Department to permit those.
On or after. Okay. That makes me feel a little more comfortable. I just, when I first was reading it, I thought I was reading it right, but I think I may have been wrong. I just want to make sure that you can do what you need to do with respect to the educational institutions, because I think it's really important. And I know that even at high schools, we have different species of little creatures and stuff that aren't on any endangered list, but they are only from the Northwest. And then we have other people in other parts of the country that have only things that are suited to theirs, and they exchange them back and forth so that our kids get an idea of what's out there. And so it's an important educational tool to be able to exchange things, not necessarily these big body parts and that kind of stuff. That's not a big part of it, but a lot of other kinds of things. And I would want institutions to have the opportunity that they can to be able to train people on the new stuff. You can also train, especially on some of these extinct and other critters, what to look for when they're looking at a piece of that's being sold. Is it an endangered species, not an endangered species? There's a lot of information that students and others who want to go and take these jobs need to know in order to do their job effectively. So if everybody at the university is feeling this bill does it, I'm excited to hear that. And I guess that's what I'm looking for nodding for.
The universities, as well as the independent universities, okay, as well as the community colleges, are
perfect,
all affected by this bill.
Perfect. Okay.
So I assume you consider Oregon State to be a bona fide scientific or educational institution. Is that correct?
We're on the verge of that, yes.
Okay. Would you say the same thing at the University of Oregon?
Of course I would.
There you go. Good job.
It is a land-grant school, man. Come on.
Any questions, John?
Does this mean that you can transfer ivory?
For scientific and educational purposes, yes.
So, in Mr. Mills, how many land grants does Oregon State University have?
Oregon State is the only land grant university in the state, along with our branch campus as well in Cascades and Bend.
And which ones do we have?
That's it.
All four. Air, land.
Oh, I'm sorry. You asked me what land grants. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
All air, space, land, and not sea, not air. Sun, air, space, land. Sun, space, land, and sea. Thank you.
Is this some kind of
really appreciate you asking me?
Yeah,
this
it is.
They
have
today.
To say this at the right time.
Yeah.
Do you do a handshake as well?
So are you saying the Oregon Ducks don't have an air grant?
I don't know where air
only
came
a hot
from.
Air grant.
Okay, thank you very much.
I understand, Senator Roblin, I understand your concerns with regard to the testimony today. Thank you.
I'm just, it's very important to me that they have the opportunities to do this stuff. So thank you.
Of course.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Okay, we also have Cindy Robert and Scott Beckstead signed up, please. Scott, you want to go
sure.
first?
Sure. Thank you. Chair Dembro, members of the committee, for the record, Scott Beckstead, Senior Oregon Director for the Humane Society of the United States. I'm here today to speak in support of the -3 amendments to House Bill 2576. Measure 100, which the Humane Society was one of the leading groups in the coalition, was passed by 70% of the voters, and clearly Oregonians made it clear that they want the state of Oregon to do its part to end the global poaching crisis. We can support the -3 amendments because we believe that they do not interfere with or change what the voters voted on. We understand and acknowledge the important role that educational institutions play in species conservation, and we certainly don't want Measure 100 to get in the way of that. On the other hand, as Representative Rayfield stated, we also don't want to pass a bill that really changes the letter and spirit of what the voters wanted to see pass. So having said that, we support the -3 amendments to House Bill 2576, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, great. Thank you, Scott. All right, Cindy, I'm really curious to hear what Metro's interest is in this.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cindy Robert, and I'm here on behalf of Metro. And as many of you may know, Metro actually serves the Oregon Zoo. They're one of our biggest members,
sure.
groups, and one of our biggest responsibilities. And we'll also say it's the state's number one paid-for visitor attraction. So one of the things that's really interesting is we have a lot of information on this issue. Randy Tucker gave me so much information. I've learned a lot, and you know what? I had him put it on OLIS so you all can read it when you want. What I basically want to say is the -3 amendments are three sentences long, so that's about how long my testimony should be. When ballot measure 100 passed and it talked about educational institutions, we figured that included the zoo. When this bill came out, it defined bona fide scientific or educational institutions, and all of a sudden it didn't include the zoo. So what we're asking for are some amendments that just make it very clear that bona fide scientific or educational institutions include zoos and aquariums that have been accredited by the National Association of Zoos and Aquariums. That's it. It's very simple. We support the intent of both the ballot measure and the bill. So thank you.
Great. And again, to reiterate, Scott, you're fine with that.
Right. The -3 amendments were written at the behest of the Oregon Zoo because they wanted to be included in that, and the Oregon Zoo Foundation was such an important leader in the campaign to pass Measure 100. So, yeah, we would support it.
Great. Senator Roblin.
So I was just going to ask, as another client, as the independent colleges, do they agree with what the other scientists said earlier?
So I will tell you that, Mr. Chair, Senator Roblin, that Jock Mills came to me and talked to me about this bill very early on.
Okay.
So thank you for also acknowledging that I have a group that's included in that realm. And we thought it was very interesting, and we certainly applaud him for doing it, and we support the bill as well.
Okay. Thanks.
Great. Any other questions, colleagues? Okay. Thank you both very
thank
much.
Thank you.
Yeah. We'll schedule this for a work session Thursday as well. With that, I'll close our public hearing on 2576 and go to our final public hearing, House Bill 2266. And can we have Shannon and Kevin come up? And Beth, what is this bill, please?
House Bill 2266 would eliminate the current requirement to transfer any unexpended or unobligated balances out of the Hatchery Research Center Fund as of July 1 each year. There is a fiscal impact statement that was issued, no revenue impact.
Okay, Shannon, welcome back.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Chair Dembrough, Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Shannon Hearn, Deputy Director of Department of Fish and Wildlife. Thank you for hearing our one department bill today. It's gone through several amendments. We thought it was almost there, and now we're in the emergency clause potential need as well. Just for a little bit of history, Oregon Hatchery Research Center was set up to do fisheries research that benefits improvements in fisheries in Oregon. So looking at hatchery-wild interactions, how to better operate our hatchery facilities, those kind of things. In 2015, the legislative body set up a fund for it, the Oregon Hatchery Research Center Fund. It gets surcharge and ad valorem license sales. It was coupled with the Hatchery Construction Fund at that time. And the law requires that every July annually, any unobligated, unexpended funds roll over into it. And so what we're trying to do in this bill is decouple those two accounts. And so we worked on the House side, and the current bill that you see does several things. One, it does allow any unexpended, unobligated amounts at the end of the year to stay in the Oregon Hatchery Research Center Fund, and it actually keeps them there until the law sunsets. And then when the law sunsets, any unexpended funds roll over into the Hatchery Construction Fund. And then we clarified over there that those funds there in the Hatchery Construction Fund can only be spent on upgrades, improvements, replacements at coastal hatcheries based on the research and new technologies identified by the research at Oregon Hatchery Research Center. So with that, that met our need, seemed to clear up the intent. And then late last week, we heard that there might be the need for an emergency clause. We have some agreements in place with OSU that aren't quite finalized yet, and we're starting to push up against that July 1st date. So Kevin is here with me. He can explain if you guys are interested in what research is going on and what the problem is with those agreements.
I would love
to. Yeah. Kevin, would you like to just?
Sure. Chair Dembrough, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kevin Goodson. I'm the Acting Conservation Recovery Program Manager in Fish Division of ODFW. And I've been intimately involved with the Oregon Hatchery Research Center for quite a number of years. And we were excited that we were able to finally get funding made available to do research at this through the facility, and we worked with our advisory board. We have one of the vice chairs, Lindsay Ball, here today that was a key member of that advisory board that helped develop a research plan for the OHRC. And in that plan, we identified three priority projects that we were going to conduct that were related to the mission, which is trying to understand the differences between hatchery and wild fish and how we can minimize those and provide opportunities for citizens of the state as well as protect the native fish in our state as well. So we, the three projects we identified, one was to look into whether mate selection in the hatchery may cause a difference in the reproductive success of hatchery fish that in the wild. We know that male and female salmon and steelhead and trout select their mates, and so in the hatchery setting we do that for them, and so there's some thought that maybe there's something in the something that the fish know that we don't know about who's the best mate for which other sex. So we've got a researcher at Oregon State University that's exploring that, looking at some work that was done on the Umpqua River years ago, where they have know all the parents of offspring from both hatchery and wild fish, and then they can look and see how well those fish performed in the wild. and look to see whether the good survivors, maybe there was something special about those and how those mates were selected versus the others. One of the other projects that we're working on is to look at whether there are conditions in the hatchery, whether possibly the densities that we raise the fish in or the size that we raise the hatchery fish to that might cause some selection in the hatchery that isn't as preferable out in the wild. So we've got Dr. Mike Bluen at OSU that's working on that to try to look at some different ways of rearing fish and then looking genetically to see whether you can see differences in those fish. And both of those first two studies, if we start to see that there is some methods we could use in the hatchery to actually improve their fitness in the wild or reduce the impact on the wild populations, part of those studies will then move into kind of a field test. We'll actually go into a hatchery, we'll raise the fish that way, we'll release them, then we'll let those fish go and spawn in the wild to see whether there's any differences between those two. The third project is a project that is kind of a practical, can be implemented as soon as we figure it out kind of project, and that is we have a problem at some of our hatcheries where the returning hatchery fish, this is primarily salmon and steelhead, when they return to the rivers where we release them, they don't always come back into the hatchery. They stay out into the in the stream and they spawn in the wild. Some places that's excessive. So in the case of Elk River on the south coast in Curry County, we found that there was pretty significant levels. So over 60% of the fish that were spawning were for hatchery fish that had not come back into the hatchery. So what we're trying to do in this study is to, with some researchers out of NOAA in Seattle as well as the University of Washington, is to look at whether there's some odors we can put into the water at the hatchery, primarily looking at dissolved amino acids that then could allow the fish to smell the hatchery better and return in higher numbers. So that one is one that has a lot of implications around the state, around the Pacific Northwest, if we can figure out a way to get those fish to home better. So that's a little bit about the research. I'm more than happy to answer any other questions you had on either the bill or the OHRC.
So I vaguely remember our authorizing the fund 2 years ago. And I can't remember the reason for the 10-year sunset on it. The 10-year duration, were we thinking that these studies would last 10 years, or there was a kind of panoply of studies that we wanted to phase in over that 10-year period?
Chair Dembro, I was not intimately involved with the discussions that went on that bill when it was passed, but we do anticipate that the studies will go on for at least 10 years, especially if we get to that point of field testing, because then we have to release a couple different times to make sure if we see a result, it gets repeated. So, and then we have, especially with the Elk River study, those fish don't return for 4 to 5 years. So it's quite a few, it's gonna be more than 10 years out for that study. We also recognize when we got these funds that there would be other research that would probably rise up and be important for us to try to work on, and so that was one of the other reasons to try to allow the funds to roll over from year to year, so that it was possible if we didn't spend it on these first three priority projects, we had funding available to maybe use on other priority projects that the OHRC Advisory Board would approve.
Senator Robles.
So forever after we got the hatchery set up, the only money that was coming in was grants written by scientists and students. And so we weren't able to go after priorities that we, the state of Oregon, have. And it was not until this bill happened that we actually started getting funds for our, because what we had designed this hatchery for was how do we minimize the difference between hatchery fish and wild fish. And there are a couple hot spots like the elk where, because of where our stuff, the hatchery is and where fish can spawn, that we're not getting them back, and that was really a big part of why we wanted to make sure that we didn't have too many of our hatchery fish spawning with the native fish and changing the deal, and that was a really great one. The other issues have been really important for us to figure out, because can we make our hatcheries better so we have better survival rates and better mixing if they do, because there's always going to be wandering fish out there. That's part of who they are and why they come back. And if you haven't been to the Alsea Hatchery, to see this place in action, I encourage everyone to go. It's really an amazing opportunity. They can change water flows and creek beds and all sorts of things. And it's one of a kind, actually, mm-hmm. and I am really proud of the work that's been done there. Rolling over the money makes the only sense in the world, and I do understand that over time we're going to have to look at fixing our hatcheries, because I think there will be information that will come out that says this is a better way to do that. And it's really important from my perspective to continue to have hatcheries functioning in a really good way, because that's how we get fish to catch. So I really appreciate the work that's being done on this and the recognition that we don't want that money just to go general fund or something. We need to keep it in the hands of the people who have really been working hard. We've got a great board right now. I think it's doing really well, and I encourage people to come by and look at what's happening at that hatchery.
Too bad you weren't a bass fisherman. You wouldn't have to do that.
I know. As my other good friend knows, I don't like bass eating my smolts, but in some of our rivers on our coast, we shouldn't have bass, but that's been able to win that issue too much. We did transfer bass all over this country in railroad cars for a lot of years.
You did?
Yeah.
They've been here a lot longer than we have.
Anyway, so we're going to make them big enough so they can fight back for those bass, I guess, or fast enough. But anyway, I appreciate, and Lindsay being in the audience, he's been a stalwart helper on this particular deal and been willing to put in his time and efforts to help the board, so I really appreciate that, too.
Yeah, thank you very much. Okay, thank you. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
This, too, seems like a bill that's ready to be scheduled, and so we will.
Oh,
yes, Senator.
This doesn't have currently an emergency clause, and you're thinking needs one, right?
Yeah. So should we put one on?
Chair Dembro, there was going to be a request for one.
We'll just do it.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that makes sense, too, if we're in the middle of a timeline. Yeah.
Thank you.
Great. Okay. So I'll close our public hearing on 2266. And colleagues, guess that's it. We are adjourned.
Thank you.
We are adjourned.
Thank you.